Hi, this is Pat. Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Sexual predators and comprehensive sex education both break down inhibitions. That's what they start with. They also gain trust with the child and then slowly start to get them towards sexual activity.
Anything goes. You are teaching children adult child sex. You're teaching transgender issues. Children are moldable and influenced by that.
They said, okay, now we need you and your team to be able to explain what homosexuality is to a four-year-old student.
To introduce this kind of material at that age, frankly, it's child abuse.
You're going to teach our children that it's okay for any two children of any age, of any sex, to have sexual intercourse with each other as long as two components are present. One's using a condom and they both give consent. Did I hear that correctly?
It's not a neutral venue. There's no such thing. Okay, the schools are doing your job. They are discipling your children, but they're not discipling them in the faith of Jesus Christ.
It's only the exceptional child that even survives that system. Most do not survive. Most have not survived.
They believe that children are sexual from birth and that they deserve and have the right to be sexually active and to seek sexual pleasure. And if anyone is stopping them from that, then you are judging and oppressing them.
Even kindergarten now, they're wanting to teach them more and more perverse information and acts and put that into the children's minds. And once that poison is in the child's mind, it doesn't leave. They'll always remember what they learned. And it's by design, it's orchestrated.
In my humble opinion, it will be worse before it gets better.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon
and
code
welcome back to Generation Radio, where no topics, off limits, and everything filtered.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Neither products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
We do 3 hours on Wednesdays.
Welcome.
First hour,
to
David
Chosen Generation.
Second
host,
hour,
Pastor
we had Melanie Collette and then Rick
you
Manning.
You are a chosen generation.
And a great,
royal
great conversation, by
a
the way, about
nation,
our Indian ministry and the needs
that you should
associated
shoot forth
with
the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past
well,
were not a people, but are now the people of God,
really
which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
On our Indian ministry.
And now, chosen generation, where no topic is off limits, and everything is filtered through biblical glasses.
Rick and I talked quite a bit about that.
Now, here's
all right,
your host,
let me get
Pastor
right to
Greg.
Our topic, censortrack.org, MRC, and Newsbusters. Michael Morris joins me. Michael, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, always, man. Always. And a belated happy Thanksgiving and an early Merry Christmas.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. hope you had a restful one and enjoyed a lot of good turkey.
You know what? We had a wonderful time. There were 11 of us around the table. Actually, 12. One of my daughter is expecting our fourth grandchild. So there were 12 of us around the table, and so that was really, really neat.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was talking with, I don't know if you're familiar with it. You know, you ought to check this out. It's called America's Digital Shield. And it was put together by Dr. Robert Epstein. And it is a real-time tracking of the of how Google and Bing and so on are manipulating, and he actually has a live ephemeral experiences captured, and it's a rolling count. It's now at 62,592,000, closing in on 593,000 in about 2 seconds. It'll hit 593,000 right now. It just hit 593,000. But it keeps rolling, and it shines a light on big tech's dark secrets, revealing real-time ephemeral manipulation. Google, Bing, YouTube.
I was just checking this out yesterday. I mean, this is fascinating stuff. Robert Epstein puts this out. We've kind of been tracking right alongside Dr. Epstein and some of the nonsense that big tech is up to, and this is a good compliment to censortrack.org and MRC Free Speech America. And we're glad that he's going after the bad guys just like we are. You were mentioning censortrack.org earlier. We just put out a massive study yesterday, alarming election interference. It is incredible. Big tech already in the lead up to the 2024 election has already censored Biden's opponent 162 times to only 7 times Biden. 162 times big tech has censored Biden's opponents to only 7 for Joe Biden. You can check the report out on MRC.org, again, MRC.org, and also censortrack.org. The media clearly trying to black out Biden opponents on social media. According to data, Biden's opponents have been censored 162 times, but Biden's only 7. We measured this when the first candidate announced, and I believe it was Stapleton, all the way back in 2021, through Thanksgiving. And so this is, kind of a holistic approach to the censorship issue of presidential candidates for the 2024 election. The most censored candidate, believe it or not, was Vivek Ramaswamy. He had 18 confirmed cases of censorship, and most frequently for asking or questioning the left climate change agenda. RFK Jr., Biden's chief Democratic opponent until he switched over to an independent candidate, was censored 17 times. YouTube actually deleted 7 of his videos, and his videos were about COVID-19, vaccinations, or even the assassination of his father. So if you run afoul of the left's narrative, you're going to get censored, and that's abundantly clear with Vivek and RFK Jr. But it didn't stop there. Nikki Haley was third with 14 cases. 16 times YouTube put labels on her videos where she was talking about abortion. And let's be clear about this. Nikki Haley is probably the furthest to the left of the presidential candidates when it comes to the issue of abortion. She said that she doesn't want to make it a national issue. And, even still, YouTube said that's not far enough to the left. And so they censored that by putting labels on the video and calling into question her video. DeSantis, meanwhile, Ron DeSantis, had 7 times that he was censored by big tech. And one of the biggest instances was actually on the X platform. He had talked about childhood mutilation and gender transitioning surgery, talking about Chloe Cole, who transitioned and then detransitioned. And probably most disturbing of all, Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump, is actually in the top five of most censored candidates, and he's not even on most of the major media platforms. He was censored a total of 9 times, and he has his own platform. It's incredible.
It is the targeting that is taking place really is, I believe, quite scary when you consider the influence. And I think this is the thing that people are not, we're so used to, and I think we still are, we have a trusting culture. There is a large swath, and the polls are showing a distrust of government and some distrust of media and so on. But it's really kind of an interesting dichotomy, Michael, and I'm sure you guys have kind of looked into this. On the one hand, people say, yeah, I don't trust it. But on the other hand, when you ask them what are their opinions about particular issues, their opinions line up with the very media that they say they don't trust. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, and it goes back to sort of those ephemeral experiences that you were talking about earlier from Dr. Robert Epstein's website. These big tech companies and big media are able to kind of plant these subliminal messages into people's minds by repeating the same nonsense over and over and over and over again. And so it's no surprise, at least to me, that the American people's opinions are tracking along with what they're being told that they should think time and time again on big media and on big tech.
Yeah, and for those of you that are watching, you can see on the screen, I mean, the numbers are rolling. What does this mean? Why are the numbers rolling? Well, the numbers are rolling because these are live. They are literally pulling data from these different areas, from Google, from Bing, from YouTube, and so on. And they are tracking the actual individuals as they do clicks. What you're seeing is the numbers grow as the clicks take place. And Michael, this is, it's really kind of stunning when you think about it. But that's 62 million people who are being influenced, because what are they doing? They're searching, they're viewing, they're looking at a reel, they're looking at a TikTok, they're looking at a YouTube. They're looking at something or looking something up, and without even realizing it, they're being spoon-fed the information that these entities want them to receive. They're being spoon-fed.
You're right, and it's terrifying because, look, you know, one of the most notoriously bad actors in this sphere, and Epstein, again, has it on here on his website as well, but we've been tracking it here at MRC Free Speech America, is Google. Back to the presidential censorship study that we published yesterday, Google is actually number one in targeting presidential candidates, specifically Biden's opponents. Google censored 112 times presidential candidates. YouTube, also part of Alphabet, it's a Google sister site, the video sharing platform, was number two. 37 cases of big tech censorship. YouTube at number two. So, but why does this matter? What's the big deal here? Google has 90+% of the market share for all search worldwide. Worldwide. And what's worse than that, Google's manipulation is extremely important, because when you do a Google search, most people don't even go past the top six
right
search results on the first page. And Google has been burying Republican presidential campaign websites and studies that we have done repeatedly here at the Media Research Center.
Yeah, it's. I mean, when you sit here, I've got up right now, you know, your Google erases Biden challengers on the search engines. Biden's number three. Williamson is four. I didn't even know who that guy is. Warren is 11. RFK Jr. is 24. Trump is not shown. DeSantis is number 10. Ramaswamy is not shown. And Haley is not shown. Not that I'm a big fan of whatever. But the point is these folks don't even come up in search engines. This is stunning. Stunning.
Well, and it's worse than that. That was the search that you just described was actually an innocuous search for presidential campaign websites. So what you should expect is maybe you would see Biden as a top candidate, but certainly you would think that Trump would be somewhere in the top two or three, you know, results there because he's the leading Republican presidential candidate, but he doesn't show up at all. And in fact, in the previous searches, there were no Republicans that appeared on the first page of search results. So we dug a little bit deeper, and we've done this again, time and time again. And we actually did a little bit more specific search on Google using a clean environment. And we searched Republican presidential campaign websites instead of just presidential campaign websites. Google did not produce a single Republican, even when we searched for Republican presidential campaign websites.
Wow.
Donald Trump's website, shockingly, did not appear. He's polling over 50%, according to all major polls, does not show up. Guess who it showed? Marianne Williamson, who's running as a Democrat. Now, as a lady, Marianne Williamson, she's famous for what do they call them, healing crystals or some nonsense. And recent Republican dropout, Will Hurd. The guy's not even running anymore, and he showed up in the search results. So in effect, no Republican at all because he ended his campaign over a month ago, and he was polling at zero to begin with.
It's absolutely insane when you stop and think about what it is that they're doing. But again, this speaks, ladies and gentlemen, to the issue that we have, and that issue being that we have a manipulation when we talk about, you know, what are people thinking. And the polls say, well, you know, I don't believe, you know, MSNBC, and I don't believe CNN, and okay, well, that's great, except that then when we ask about specific issues related to the propaganda that they're putting out, now we find these percentages align with their nonsense, and so that's what makes Dr. Epstein's, you know, tabulation now at 62,595,000. I mean, while we have been talking, we've added almost 3,000 people to the number just in the past 20 minutes.
That's astounding. It's astounding. But unfortunately, it's not surprising at all. And right. It gets even more terrifying when you start thinking about the next wave. That's what I'll call it today. The next wave. These big tech companies are now going to start using artificial intelligence, and indeed they're already doing so to do this even more. So, I mean, you can already see this on most search platforms. At the top, you'll see an AI-curated summary of results. So anytime you search, at the top of the search page, and a lot of these search platforms, you'll see a summary that AI has put together. Now, you might think, well, that's great. That makes it real convenient and easy for me. Well, if Google's already been manipulating the search in traditional search algorithms, how much more are they going to manipulate the search using artificial intelligence? That's the question. And I think the results are going to be astonishing.
Yeah, it really is something else. And now, you know, the other thing that's going on that I think is another piece of news that I think is significant, and that is the media's coverage of what's happening with Israel and the marches in our streets, and really a kind of ignoring there. You know, I've watched a lot of social media platforms, as an example, talking about the people that are tearing down posters of individuals that have been taken hostage by Hamas. And I don't see media stories about that. I see media stories that are very favorable to the terrorists. And woe are the terrorists, but not much about the hostages.
Well, look, we talked about this shortly after the attack on October 7th. You know, Republicans, conservatives, many pundits on the right were saying, and correctly so, that there was going to be a narrative shift because the media started in favor and in solidarity with Israel, who had just been horrifically attacked by terrorists, Hamas terrorists, actually recognized and labeled terrorists by the United States government. And yet what we said was going to happen was eventually this is going to get drawn out. They're going to start comparing numbers, and they're going to say, look, Israel is the aggressor. And they're going to start their anti-Semitic tropes again against Israel. And sure enough, we've hit that point.
Well, you know, there's another one that's up here, which is really kind of shocking to me, honestly, and that has to do with your story about Beyonce. Beyonce's Renaissance film is screening in Israel, and leftists are triggered. That's crazy to me.
Right. I mean, it's incredible, you know, because anything that would actually benefit Israel, it seems, the left opposes. And then the media lapdogs just repeat and regurgitate the leftist narrative and the leftist line. So the fact that Beyonce would actually go and do anything in Israel at all is apparently triggering to them, which should come as no surprise. You know, the left likes to call itself the party, you know, or the side that wants diversity. But that could be, it's furthest from the truth. It's the furthest from the truth because they don't really want diversity. They want unanimity of thought. And if you go against, run afoul the preferred narrative, then you're on the wrong side. You're going to get canceled.
Well, and of course, the irony to me with regards to that is I wouldn't say that, you know, that Beyonce is necessarily a conservative with a lot of her views. She's done some things that I think have caused concerns, relative to, conservatives and our beliefs, but it's just crazy that it just revalidates what your guys are pointing out regarding, you know, censor track and regarding the line. There is a definitive line. And you are not allowed to cross that line no matter who you are. And if you cross that line, they're going to come after you.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And look, traditional liberals used to be in favor of free speech. But everything that we've been talking about so far, it's all about free speech. MRC President Brent Bozell actually talked about that yesterday on Fox News when talking about our recent study. He said, look, this is all about free speech. And in fact, it is. Even Beyonce going over there and putting on her show in Israel, it's about free speech. The left doesn't want anyone to talk out against their narrative. And time and time again, we see the media and big tech trying to silence the opposition to benefit the Democrats and the left.
Yeah, there's no question the efforts that are being used to manipulate are just absolutely astronomical. Have you seen, by the way, Dinesh D'Souza's film Police State?
I've not personally seen it, but some of the people on my team have, and he actually pulls up the pyramid of far-right radicalization in there, which is actually an MRC Free Speech America discovery. A recent report we put out, a study you can actually find up on newsbusters.org, that details the nonsense and the craziness the federal government has been doing with universities across the country to silence American speech.
It's really, quite a powerful film, and I would really strongly recommend that individuals would check it out because, man, the documenting, the interviews that he does, the evidence that he brings forward is incredibly powerful. Police State is the name of the film. Newsbusters.org and MRC. Michael, thanks so much for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it. I wish you a Merry Christmas and look forward to talking with you again. It'll be next year. My goodness, next year. Wow.
Well, thank you for having me on, and a Merry Christmas to you and all your viewers as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to take a break, and we will be back on the other side. Dr. David Wormser will be joining us for a conversation about what is going on in Israel coming up right after this brief break. And let me find that break. There we go. All right, I'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio right after this.
So up next, we have Clan Slight. When you have different... So up next, we have Clan Slight. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And Clan Slight is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your Clean Slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your Clean Slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size, regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Neither products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Did you
you know you can do your tithing and love offering right from your computer? Visit www.chosengenerationradio.com to support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation. Now, back.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation. Let me go like that. There we go. And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topics off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. My very special guest, Dr. David Wormser, Senior Analyst, Middle East Affairs at the Center for Security Policy. David, welcome. Good to have you with me. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, always a pleasure, Pastor. Always a pleasure.
I wish that we were here under happier terms. I'm going to bring up the map really quick. I'd like to start with identifying where the attacks are coming from, because this is not a single front war that's being fought over there right now.
Yeah.
So I've got a map up right now. I've got Egypt down to the south. I've got the Gaza Strip in gray. The West Bank is the other large piece here, folks, that is in gray. In yellow is Lebanon. In green is Syria into the north. And then the Jordan as well. So talk to me about where the fronts are and where the battle's taking place.
Well, the primary one is that little sliver next to Egypt, where it's green with Egypt and orange or yellow with Israel. You have that little gray strip. That's the Gaza Strip, and that's where most of the fighting is taking place. There's an awful lot of activity in the West Bank, which for those who read the Bible know is Judea and Samaria. Judea, if you see Jerusalem, if it's a backwards B. You see Jerusalem dissecting the north and south. The north is Samaria. The south is Judea. Hebron is in the south. Nablus, which we know by the name of Shechem, is in the north. So there's a lot of activity over the last 24 hours there. There's been a lot of minor fighting, mostly police-type actions, because the Israelis are still present in the West Bank outside the cities. There's self-governance. But the Israelis have essentially maintained some of the control over the West Bank. So they can move in very quickly, and they have been over the last 5 weeks, but certainly over the last 24 hours, major high-profile attacks that have rounded up some of the structures, the terrorist structures in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria. Now, the northern border, which is yellow with Lebanon and Syria, which is green, has been quiet in the last 24 hours, but not entirely quiet the day or two before that. That was pretty active up until the ceasefire, the momentary ceasefire a week ago. And then not on the screen, if you go down where the Jordan is, orange, and then underneath you start seeing yellow, that's Saudi Arabia. And then underneath Saudi Arabia is Yemen. Yemen is about 1.5 miles away from the center of Israel, but they have been sending somewhere between 10 to 25 missiles a day, very heavy caliber missiles into Israel. None have reached. They were all shot down. The missiles are capable of reaching, and they're not badly constructed.
Okay.
They would have reached, but they've been shot down. By Israeli air defense, a couple of them by American cruisers and destroyers that were on picket duty in the Red Sea, and very interestingly, a lot of them by Saudi Arabia. Essentially, Saudi Arabia is defending Israel, which is a turn of events we never thought we'd see. So at any rate, that's roughly what's going on in terms of violence. But right now, there's a ceasefire that will last anywhere between another 12 and hours to another 3-4 days.
All right. So several things pop into my mind. One, relative to the West Bank. The West Bank, by the map, folks, I mean, we're talking about that. That is what surrounds Jerusalem. Where's the Temple Mount in relationship to that?
The Temple Mount is dead center in Jerusalem. That's the biblical heartland of
right.
Israel, which is the West Bank, Judea and Samaria. But the Temple Mount is in Jerusalem.
So we've got Bethlehem, Hebron, Nablus. Yeah. I mean, these are There's another one up to the north that I know. Is it Nazareth?
Well, there's Nazareth, which would already be in Israel again, where the orange would loop back around, where it's part of Israel,
okay.
Per se. But under it, you see Nablus. Nablus is just a corruption of the old city Neapolis, which is what the Romans called Shechem.
Okay.
So it's Shechem from the Bible.
Right.
And outside there, you have Mount Ebal and so forth, where Joshua's altar was.
Mm-hmm.
So that's there. And then Beth El, which is well known in the Bible, is just north of Jerusalem by about 2-3 miles. Mm-hmm. 2-3 miles is, if you look from the Jordan River, which is the border of the orange, Jordan, all the way to the sea, the blue Mediterranean Sea.
Okay.
Or if you prefer, the Dead Sea, which is that odd-looking shaped sea in the far right.
Right.
The whole distance from there to the sea is about 60 miles,
mm-hmm.
Or less, I'm sorry, 60 kilometers, which is about 45 miles, 42 miles, something like that.
Okay.
So when I say 2-3 miles north of Jerusalem, Bethlehem is only about 2-3 miles south of Jerusalem, and you see where Bethlehem is, which is just under Jerusalem.
Yes, sir.
And then you have Hebron, which is about 15 miles south of Jerusalem. So that's what it gives you, the size of everything.
Yeah, which is, I mean, the scaling is, it's very close. And I think the issue to understand is that puts terrorists right on top of, I mean, my wife and I were looking at some properties over there, just kind of looking at what, and we found, you know, in some of the areas just south of Bethlehem, there's a whole bunch of properties that are for sale.
And my wife
was like, oh, honey, look at these things. And I was like, yeah, babe, now look at where that's at. Look at, you know, the area that is in. It's in the West Bank. And this is an area where these terrorists are threatening essentially the Jewish people that are living in these communities. And you have to be concerned about your health and your safety.
Absolutely. You know, those communities, but also Jerusalem, also the settlements to the north, there's some major settlement blocks in Bethel. There's some toward the coast, more up in the north, west of Nablus. And most importantly, if you see Israel as you go north in the West Bank, Israel itself becomes only 7-8 miles wide. And the big problem there is if you take what Hamas did in Gaza and you superimpose those distances on the West Bank, just about all of Israel would have fallen on October 7th. So when we talk about two states or giving the Palestinian Authority control of the West Bank, we are talking about a situation where 80% of Israel's population would have been conquered and slaughtered on October 7th.
Right.
Including Jerusalem, including most of Tel Aviv, and just about all the areas around that. Beersheba, too. Beersheba is very close to the West Bank way in the south. So it really, the geography doesn't lend itself after October 7th, when the Israelis now are quite aware of their security threats. October 7th does not, the West Bank does not lend itself to a defendable border if Israel withdrew from that, apart from the historic and biblical significance of those areas, which is the real heart and soul of the Jewish world. And frankly, it's important that it stays under Western control. Israel's a Western country. We don't want Hamas and the Islamists to control the heartland of Christianity either, or the,
right.
the cradle of Christianity.
So let me jump again. The attack that happened on the 7th was nearly 50 years from the attack that happened in 1973.
Yes. Yes.
And one of the similarities, obviously, was the stunning shock and the lack of preparedness, really, for the size of the attack that took place. But I think what's interesting, and you messaged me about it, and I hear you talking about it, is that there are those in Israel's apparatus of government here that are falling back again into this idea that, well, we can appease these people and somehow that's going to make this situation go away.
Yeah, you know, you hit it right on. First of all, the 73 war, what you see is, and this is so important for Americans to pay attention to this, the complacency and world of conceptions that Israel carried into the 73 war and caused a surprise attack that cost 2,500 Israeli soldiers their lives. And again, almost then, the Israelis faced then conventional armies that overran territory. They won the war. They won it big. I mean, they were very close to Cairo, very close to Damascus, the capitals of Syria and Egypt. I mean, a stunning victory. They took on the Soviet Union pretty much alone at that point, too. But they started the war in a near destruction point of view. But it was the complacency and the conceptions that, oh, we're so strong. Who would touch us? Who would dare touch us? I mean, come on, we're so strong.
Right.
That is also the way America's defense community looks at itself. We think still we're in a unipolar moment at the end of the Cold War where we're so strong. I mean, who in their right mind would pick a fight with America now? Right?
Yeah.
So we have that structure. The second thing is we see 50 years later, 53 years later, that those conceptions were not exercised from our soul in Israel. And the defense establishment actually became distorted and constructed around those bad conceptions, which is what failed on October 7th, a month and a half ago. Those same conceptions define American security and the security apparatus, and they're also entrenched in American defense structures. And they are there's a whole elite surrounding those conceptions in America as well. And we have the same idea now. Who would dare touch us? Who? And so I think at the end of the day, what is happening in Israel on the defense side also is a microcosm of what we have to wake up to here. The Israelis are woken up. They've been painfully burned by this, and they are awake now. Time will tell whether they whether they purge their whole system of all these people that kept delivering these bad conceptions that lead to these disasters. My sense is they will now slowly, but we still have to even get started. We have to even realize in the United States that we have that same problem.
Right.
So I think it's very important that we begin to look at that.
All right, let me jump to another topic, and that has to do with the hostage exchange. There was a big story. I talked about it with Matt Long yesterday, but it's worth bringing up because I'm sure there are other examples of this. There was a woman who was released, and a big deal was made about the deformities of her face and so on. But nothing was said about the fact that she was a suicide bomber. Nothing was said about the fact that she actually blew herself up along with an IDF soldier who is still recovering. Nothing was said about the fact that she has, right now, she has been released, but we know that her intent is to come back and attack Israel again. I mean, it's very clear. So we have terrorists, convicted terrorists, that are being released by Israel in exchange for innocent children.
That's right. And, the press starts with the fallacy of saying it's a hostage deal or exchange hostages. Israelis are hostages, some as young as, well, now only 2 weeks old.
Yeah.
Because there apparently was one baby born in captivity, under Hamas captivity. But beyond that, they took a 10-month-old baby hostage as well as a number of other infants, maybe a year old, maybe 3 years old, but infants, as well as a lot of old people, 80 years old and older. These are hostages. These are hostages innocent of anything. The people that Israel has are prisoners. They are terrorists who have been captured, who have done terrorist actions, who have blood on their hands. For example, the one you mentioned, they're making a big deal about, oh, she has a deformed face. Look what the Israelis did. The Israelis didn't do anything. She tried to launch a car bomb in the middle of a crowded area, but it fizzled and caught fire instead of exploded, and she was burned in her face. So the Israelis, at their expense, have done years of reconstructive surgery on her in order to make her look at least reasonable compared to what she was, all at the Israeli expense, free medical care and so forth. But she's a prisoner who tried to blow up a bunch of people in a car bomb. Another one, and this is the real, real cruelty of all this. Today, there will be released somebody who only several months ago tried to stab a mother and the babies in her baby carriage. And the worst thing is she will be released to her house. Babies. So at the end of the day, the Israelis who are victims of these terrorists, families of survivors and survivors who are maimed and damaged for life, will see these hundreds of terrorists come back into their neighborhoods untouchable because they were part of this deal. So at the end, this is a painful, painful deal for Israel. Many in Israel question its wisdom because of it.
Well, and this is the kind of, stuff that you talked about, that you and I have talked about, as it relates to, what they are, what Israel has to do in order to undo what Hamas has done. Am I making sense?
Yeah, what Israel has to do is not this. I mean,
right.
What this is that you have a Western country like the United States, like Europe, who values life so greatly that they will do anything to get their babies back. And you have an enemy that values death so greatly that there is no cruelty, depravity, or price that they're not willing to pay to continue to be evil. And this is just who you're dealing with. And by the way, it's not me who said that. It is a head of Hamas said it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
He said the difference between the Jews and them is the Jews value life and they value death. And he said that with great pride that we're going to win. We're going to win because we don't care about dying and being cruel and evil. You care about life and being moral. You're so pathetic and weak. That's essentially what he was saying.
Yep.
That's what you're dealing with here. That's what you're dealing with.
It's just really stunning to think about. All right, I want to switch to another topic that's come up that you and I have talked about, and that, again, has to do with, well, who are the Jews and who is Israel and the history and so on. I had somebody that posted something on Facebook having to do with Oppenheim's study, and there was another piece that they had put on there regarding a DNA project by a Dr. Aaron L. Hock. You've responded to a bit of that, but talk to me, if you would, about, again, these pieces of information that are attempting, it would seem to me, they are attempting to discredit certain groups being associated with Israel, or whether or not, I guess, there's a Jewish people today in Israel that has a right to that land.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing goes back to the original claim of the Palestinians that they are the descendants of the ancient Jews. Jesus was a Palestinian. He was a freedom fighter for Palestine. And the Jews are nothing more than Europeans who claim to be descendants of an ancient people, but really are not. And it's all an invented white colonial assault on an indigenous population. The problem with all that is there are no facts or history that speak to their version. In fact, every fact, every history, every contemporary writing, every scientific study, every piece of archaeology, every DNA study that is internationally recognized proves the point that the Jewish people today are the descendants of the ancient Jews, the ancient Israelites. And we have it from DNA. The Oppenheim study is so interesting because her conclusion was, in fact, yes, the DNA proves Jews come from that area. And yet out on the web, it's like, oh, Oppenheim study shows Jews did not come from that area. It's literally inverting what the study says.
Right.
The other thing is there's a lot of DNA markers. We have J2 and J1 markers in Judaism. All Jews have it. We even can identify where in the land of Israel they came from. J2 tends to be more in the north in Galilee, J1 further south. And all Jews have that. We also have the Aaron marker. Because of who can be a Cohen, in other words, a descendant of Aaron,
okay,
the Moses's brother, there's a unique marker that you can identify that has to have that common origin, and it's definitely as far back as 2,000 to 3,000 years old. The other thing is now we have bodies and DNA being recovered from that area, and it, sure enough, it matches up. So the whole idea that the Jews are not that, by the way, we also have tremendous historical records from every period talking about the Jewish communities and who they are, whether it's 200 AD, 1200 AD, 2100 AD, or 2000 AD. We know the Jewish history is deeply recorded at the time that it happens. Now, what we do know about the Palestinians is their DNA shows they come from the Arabian Peninsula. As you'd imagine, they're Arabs from what is today Saudi Arabia. The second thing about it is that a lot of them seem to have come also from Syria and Egypt. And that corresponds to the historic record, which is in the 1920s and the 1930s, partly because the Jews and Jewish scientists managed to drain the swamps and find a mechanism to fight the mosquitoes. Malaria went away. And the second thing is with the Jewish return of larger Jewish communities. Jews, by the way, have had a continuous presence in that area since the temple. In Pekin, there has never been a non-Jewish presence. In Hebron, up until the Arabs massacred all the Jews out of existence right. In 1929, there was a Jewish presence, continuous. And every historical record traveler at the concurrent times verify that. So we know the Palestinians, on the other hand, we see massive immigration of today's Palestinians in the 1920s and the 1930s. In other words, more than half of the Palestinian population can trace their ancestry back all to an ancient set 80, 90 years. That's it.
Wow.
They're the ones who are the colonial enterers. And they came in because malaria was taken care of.
Right.
And the economy started taking off under the Jews. So there was, you know, in Syria, in Jordan, in Egypt, these were basket cases economically. So they came to Palestine, to Israel. Palestine, by the way, is what the Romans called Israel. It isn't a nation
right.
of people.
Why do you think that Saudi Arabia is assisting in knocking down these missiles?
I think Saudi Arabia is knocking down these missiles because it sees this war as a strategic event. It understands that Iran is their enemy, that Iran is going to destroy Saudi Arabia, and that they need protection. They need a strong horse as an ally. They want Israel to win. Israel's okay. their ally. They know Israel doesn't threaten other Arab countries.
Right.
They know that ultimately the Israeli economy and the Israeli people can be friends with them. Their close associates, the United Arab Emirates, have already made peace with Israel, as has Bahrain.
Okay.
So the Saudis are on their road to making peace, but it's a strategic interest on their part. They do not see their survival as viable if Israel doesn't win this war. So they are now fully supporting. And by the way, Egypt is being more cagey, but deep down, they're basically aligning with what the Israelis need them to do as well. Because again, the Egyptian government understands it will not survive an Israeli defeat.
And essentially, what Israel must do is destroy both Hamas and Hezbollah. That really is the objective here.
Yeah, you know, we hear about all these Palestinian refugees, the poor Palestinians who had to move to the southern part of the Gaza Strip. We don't realize there's almost a third of a million Israelis that are refugees right now inside their own country.
Yeah.
The top part of the country is uninhabitable because of what happened in Hamas. The Hezbollah is poised to invade. It is sending rockets, not in the last 2 days, but it will again in a day or two, sending rockets across the border all the time. These are uninhabitable areas.
Right.
The areas in the south near Gaza are uninhabitable. So because of the threat of the missiles and further intrusions, sure, and terror. And frankly, a lot of the areas around Jerusalem, the settlements, are uninhabitable right now because of the threat of Palestinians in Nablus or in Ramallah or Hebron just invading the towns next to them and killing the Jews. So you really have an untenable situation. Israel has to solve all these security issues at once, and all of those cannot be done by agreement. They will have to be done by war.
Yeah.
So Israel is in a full state of war, basically, with the West Bank Palestinians, with Hezbollah and Lebanon and all Palestinian factions everywhere, yeah, plus in Gaza.
Absolutely crazy. Yeah. All right. We're going to sign off over on TECN, folks. I'll be back with more tomorrow. And for those of you that are still staying with us, let me just close with a couple of other quick questions. Relative to the statement that Israel is trying to make regarding Hamas, regarding Hezbollah, how dramatic of a victory does Israel really need in order to send a message, let's say, to Iran?
In my view, if I were king, which I would never want to be, just remember Shakespeare, uneasy rests the head upon which sits the crown.
Yes, absolutely.
King Richard. Anyway, bottom line is, were I king, not only does Hamas have to be utterly destroyed in Gaza and Israel reoccupy Gaza, because the security situation will require at least a year or two of careful, meticulous purging,
okay,
of all remaining assets and operatives. And then Israel would have to find some mechanism whereby it can devolve some local authority to Palestinians, but they have to maintain the security control over the entire circumstance there. They cannot go back to the way it was. No independence, no second state, no Oslo B, no Palestinian authority, Israeli control, basically. The second thing is Israel has to, in my view, devastate Hezbollah in the north. They're talking about pushing it north to the Litani River, which is about 10 kilometers north of the Israeli border. That would,
right,
take care of some of the infiltration, but it wouldn't take care of the basic problem. Because this is a strategic war between Israel and Iran, Israel has to think in terms of strategic victory. And I think the destruction of Hezbollah, which gives Christians and Druze and other minorities, are actually a vast majority of Lebanon, the ability to finally expel Hezbollah.
Right.
That would be the major strategic victory there. The destruction of the Syrian government and allowing the Druze to take over the southern salience there and hook up. That would be such a devastating strategic victory that it would reverberate back to Tehran. And we already see the Iranians hate their own government. I mean,
right,
they really hate their own government.
Mm-hmm.
But their government is willing to kill as many Iranians. I mean, like they gas their own kids in school. High school girls have been gassed by the Iranian government, Iranian girls. They kill their own people with gas. So the Iranian people are already in revolt. They're trying, but the government is still willing to kill. A major strategic defeat will very much weaken the Iranian government, throw this strategically onto their defense. They'd be on the defensive. That would constitute – and by the way, Yemen, Hodeida port has to be taken out. Sana'a Airport has to be taken out. This piracy, this taking of ships, this launching of missiles at Israel, the Red Sea, just all shipping companies now are diverting around the Cape of Good Hope in Africa rather than through the Suez, because Canal and Red Sea, because the piracy, which is what really Yemen is doing, is untenable anymore. So they have to be dealt with as well. That is really the strategic victory that has to happen now in order to turn around this war and eventually lead to a true victory, which is the destruction of the Iranian regime.
Is there, final question, is there a will, the willpower within Israelis' leadership to accomplish any of those things?
There's the will in the people. Very clearly, the people have come around. Leadership, this is a good question. I think that they have the will to do in Gaza what needs to be done.
Okay.
But I'm not sure they really fully either have the imagination or the will to do the rest. And they really have to. And I know the Israeli people are not going to – the North will have to be done. I mean, I'm hearing various inhabitants from the North, just the citizens of northern Israel, mm-hmm. screaming and yelling, and Israeli soldiers who are up there. And by the way, 80% of Israel's mobilized army is in the North, not in the South near Gaza. Shows you how big a threat there is up there.
Right.
They're all saying the same thing, which is you have to destroy Hezbollah. So I do believe that may yet happen as well, and that will be an adequate strategic victory. But it's not going after the jugular. Israel has an opportunity to go after the jugular here on Iran. Well,
and really allowing them to hang out. You know, I think about the story of Esther as portrayed in One Night with the King, and you know that Saul was remanded to kill all of the Ammonites. And he didn't.
And he didn't. And it haunted the Jews ever since.
Yeah, and it was one of the members of that house, of that group of people that was making the agreements with Xerxes and coerced Xerxes into issuing a decree that was designed to rid the world of all Jews and the very memory of Israel.
That's right. The guy, the main protagonist here, advising the vizier, essentially advising mm-hmm. Xerxes, mm-hmm. was Haman the Agagite. Haman the Agagite is a descendant of the Amalekites, which Saul was commanded to kill to the last.
Yeah.
And didn't. And so, yes. By the way, the story of Dina is another one where they took Dina and raped her, and the response was, and you know, it's very interesting because Jacob represents that other side of Jewish strategic, in my view, strategic failure, which he was like, oh my God, how could you have done this to the population that, you know, basically the sons of Jacob avenged Dina by killing a lot of people. And Jacob was horrified. He was like, how could you do this? What will people think of us? And the son said, I don't care what people think of us. What's more important is that nobody ever does this to us again.
Mm-hmm.
And right there, you see the problem in Israel today. And right there, by the way, is your answer to whether the Jews of today or the Jews of then. The argument between Jacob and his son is exactly the argument of Jacob, of the Israelis today.
No doubt. No doubt. David, thanks for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be taking some time off in December and regrouping and retooling. So we will be back together in January. If there is any breaking news, we will try to cover it for you folks. But for the most part, I'm going to be taking December off. I'm going to take a break and say goodbye to you until tomorrow. I'll be back tomorrow with more Chosen Generation Radio. Hang on, David, just a minute. And let me.